Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as those customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Brandi Starr.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation today. So Brandi, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
So my hot take is that the customer is in control, the old playbook doesn't work, and too many organizations are just surrendering. And what I mean by that is we think about, you know, way back in the day where sales was the driver. You couldn't buy anything without talking to a salesperson. You saw the marketing, you connected with a person, they held your hand through the buying process. From a marketing perspective, it was great because we could control more of the journey. Then we got tech and more tech. And then we got AI. And of course, that is making things making information a lot easier to access. And so the customer is really in control of their buyer journey. And in many cases, they don't want to hear from us. And so the old playbooks of how we used to do things, they just don't work anymore. You know, when it, you know, form fills and constant outbound calls and all of these things, they don't work. And I talk to so many companies that they seem to be surrendering in that we don't know what to do now, so we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing. And I think that is the complete wrong thing to do. There's no excuse to surrender. We just have to adapt.
I love everything that you said in that, especially because it's one of those things where you hear it and it just sounds right. And that's how you know it's right and it is real. Because I am seeing so many companies that just seem adrift when it comes to their customer experiences and trying to get new customers and earn new customers. And they are just trying anything without any real thought about what to do. Or they're completely burying their heads in the sand and saying, you know what, customers will follow the journey we have mapped for them, even though it doesn't actually equate to how customers are making decisions. And I exist on the customer research side of the world. And so I'm seeing all of these different ways that people want to buy, and yet we are forcing them into our buying process rather than into a selling process, which is a little bit of nuance there.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And people used to follow the journey we laid out for them, not because they ever really wanted to, because they had no choice. Like, you know, I use the analogy of buying a car. Most people, if you're an adult, you've bought a car at some point. There's a very clear buying process. You go in, you know, you can research cars online, see what dealership has, what you like. You go into the dealership, somebody approaches you at the door. That's your salesperson. They walk you through. They show you things. They let you drive it. You go into the finance office. You go into the aftermarket office. You know what's coming. Nobody has ever said they enjoy the car buying process. Most will dread it. However, you don't have a choice. You can't buy anything without, you know, at that point, you couldn't buy a car without engaging. You still can't. Well, for the most part, there's some ways, but, you know, and so that's why we really have to change.
The interesting thing that you make a comment about there is that, you know, you can't really go ahead and buy a car. And even now, like, you still have to kind of follow the process. But I had an interesting experience where I was trying to buy a new car, and they had the price listed on the website of the car. I went in to look at the car. I drove the car, and then I tried to negotiate the price down. And he's like, we don't do that anymore, because it used to be that you'd come on the lot and look at the car, and we could have a price for it and we could have a negotiation. But now with the internet and all the cars being listed, like, you can go look and say, oh, this almost exact same car is this price. So we're price matching already for all of these things. There is no negotiating on the car prices anymore, because the internet makes it too easy and transparent for you to know what the other dealer across town is offering. So there's no point in even having this negotiation discussion, which I thought was just really interesting.
Yeah. And it's a perfect example of how the journey has changed, because before, you were limited to the dealerships that were in your driving distance. Now you can say, I want that car. I'm in Atlanta. You're in Iowa. I could say, I want that car in Iowa. And just as fast as I could get down to the dealership, they can have that car here for me ready to buy. And right. So it's a perfect analogy of how as technology changes, we get closer to buyers being able to buy the way that they've always wanted to buy. It just wasn't possible. And people keep saying the buyer has changed. And I don't think they have. I think they just are now more in control because they don't have to fall into those old patterns.
Right. And because it's not that your original journey map or whatever you called it, your customer, you know, sales plan, it's not that your original plan was right and correct and they were doing it. It's just that they had no other recourse. So they followed the plan as you saw, as you set it out, rather than being able to actually put themselves, to use the car analogy again, in the driver's seat. I kind of, maybe this is my hot take, I kind of feel like if you have someone who gets to the point where they're talking to a salesperson in any purchase, that is your sale to lose, because they've probably already decided before they walked in that they're like 85% going to buy this thing. And there's 15% of open questions that they might have, where it used to be, if you wanted the information, you wanted to have a conversation about the product, you would have to talk to a salesperson to get the price, to get the features, to understand if it was going to work in your system or your stack. Now, I feel like if you're a salesperson and you are losing deal after deal, you're losing people who should have been fairly sure things.
Yeah. And that is exactly what is happening. By the time the buyer engages with sales, and all the studies show it, the number's a little different depending on whose research, but anywhere between 80 to 90% through the sales cycle. And generally, they're going to reach out to the one or two final solutions to do that further due diligence and find the nuance between the two that they weren't able to find in their own research. And often buyers come into that conversation almost knowing more than the salesperson about the product. And so you think about, and this is where I feel the role of marketing now is bigger, because marketing has to put out all the things that that buyer needs in that journey where they're not ready to talk to you. And they have to do it in a way that's accessible, not behind, you know, all the gated forms. You have to support that journey and get them to that 90% sure line without ever knowing who they are. And so it makes marketing more important. And then when we think about how sales is structured, I just had this situation happen. We were looking to purchase a technology and I had done all the research. I had watched the demo videos. I had vetted the solutions in multiple communities that I'm in. I had even done a call with a user in one of my communities where she walked me through how they're using it. And so I go into this conversation and they make you talk to an SDR first. And I'm talking to this SDR that is, you know, the age of the first kid I birthed. And you can tell he is doing his best. He's following the script. But I'm like, dude, this is a waste of time. I can literally spell out for you. Here's my timeline. Here's my budget. Here's my need. Here's all the things I'm looking at. And then you get on with an AE and they ask those same questions again. And I'm right. at the point where, you know, I'm like, answer these couple of things and take my money. Like, I'm looking at you versus them. And all I need is the answers to these nuanced things. And I'm ready to sign. But instead, it's like, I got to talk to an SDR. And then the SDR has to schedule the call with the AE. And then the AE has to schedule a demo to show me the things that I already have seen. And when I ask about the back end, they don't know. And it's like, why are you making it hard for me to give you money? Like, I'm trying. And so your point of it is your sale to lose once the buyer reaches out is so accurate. And so the question is, how do we first control that 90, 80, 90% of the buying journey where they don't want to talk to us? And this is where I say companies surrender, in that they're like, it's changed. We don't know what to do. So we're just going to keep doing the same things. And that is the exact wrong approach. That's literally the definition of insanity. It's like, you have to take what is happening today and figure out, how do we support that to get them to that 90%? And then on the sales side, it is how do we adjust the way that we're selling to support the fact that buyers are coming in super educated, and then translate that into customer success once we do actually win the sale. Like, it is possible to, air quotes, and I use control loosely, and that's why I say we can assist is probably a better word, because we're not controlling anything, but we can still effectively assist and guide if we completely adjust how we're doing things.
I once had a salesperson that I worked with, and I finally had to say to him, like, hey, you have to learn to take yes for an answer. You're going in and you're just following your process. You're trying to get all of this information. You're trying to think about like the expand and the renewal, and you're trying to think, you know, long-term and have like that horizon kind of vision, but they're ready to buy this now. And it is okay to say yes to someone who is asking to buy. Like, you can take yes for an answer. You can take sold for an answer. And yet it was like a hard transition for him, because like, well, I have to ask all these discovery questions. I'm like, you don't in this day and age. These people know what they want to buy. And if they are indicating to you that they want to buy, then it's okay for you to say yes. Now, the only reason you should stop and ask questions is if there is some reason that you think that this is not going to be a fit for them, and they're going to be disappointed in their purchase in the post sale, and you're going to lose a renewal, and you're going to have a bad customer fit. But if you believe that this is a good customer fit and they've already said yes, then move on and like close the deal, and then worry about your renewal and your discovery questions after the fact.
Yeah, and the customer will value that, because you can approach it and say, hey, I understand it sounds like this, you know, this feels like a good fit, but before we move forward, let me just ask you a couple of clarifying questions, because I want to be sure that once you purchase, you're happy. And yeah, that position then takes you from being in that sales, I don't want to talk to you because I know you're going to try to sell me, to now we're working collaboratively and you actually care about me. And what happens then is, even in those questions, it then gives me as a buyer some things to think about that I may not have. And if I then still feel like this is the right solution, and this doesn't just apply for tech, but that's the probably most common thing we buy. But if I still feel like this is the right solution, now I'm extra confident. Now I'm a champion. And when we get into the sticky procurement situation, if it's a big purchase, or I've got to sell it internally, I can do so more confidently because you met the requirements I knew I had, you identified some watch outs that I didn't know, and then confirmed that this solution still meets the need. Like, this not only becomes a customer, but it becomes a long-term customer, because now I feel like we're in relationship and this is not transactional.
Right. That very simple, like, hey, I think this is a good fit, but let's double check. That can create really true, like, trust and relationship building. And all you had to do was say, like, hey, let's just double check this. So if someone is hearing this, if they are listening to this and they said, oh my God, we are surrendering, what is the one thing you would have them start doing to move in the direction of, we are not going to surrender the customer journey to the wild, wild west?
Yes. So what I would do is a mapping exercise. Don't at all think about what you do today. And this can be, you know, it depending on the size of your organization, you may need to involve more people. It may be a bigger thing. But just as an immediate takeaway, no matter what your role is, grab a white piece of paper, a whiteboard, a Lucid chart, whatever your vibe is, and start to think about and draw out who's in the buying committee. You know, start with all the people. I start down the left. These are the people. What do they care about along the way? What do they need to know? What questions are they likely to ask? And what objections may they be working themselves through? And from that point, you have to then think about, how do we put all of this out in the wild in a way that they can use it? And what this looks like is, some people will try to, oh, we got to market to every persona in the buying journey. And it's not every persona that's going to actually be looking for the solution. You're going to have your main buyer that's going to look for the solution. But how do you empower that buyer to communicate with the rest of the buying committee and have the information that they need to say, hey, CFO, here is how this is how this is going to actually prove valuable and tie to actual revenue. Hey, users, this is why it's, you know, it's valuable for you to go through the change management process of having to switch tools, add tools, whatever. You know, it's like you are then empowering your champion, and you're doing so in a way, the scary part, no forms, where you are putting it all out there. And you can put it out there in a way that clearly guides them. You still have to make some assumptions of like timing. When is the right time to send things? How do you, you know, continue to nurture? Like, we still need to do those things, but we do it from a place of support. And so that is the first place that I would start. That's the using a buzzword, low-hanging fruit. And once you do that exercise, it allows you to start having more conversations internally about what can we fix quickly. Something I've seen in a lot of clients is stripping out all the forms. That is one win of, unless they're asking for a demo, they're asking for contact, you know, something that really actually needs human touch, take out the forms. And so there's going to be quick wins based on where you are that can help remove that friction from the buyer's journey to allow them to control things and still be able to influence it. And it can grow from there, because I've seen organizations that really need a whole transformation in go-to-market from soup to nuts. And that's a, you know, 18, 24 month project. But we can always start somewhere in making it better while we're working to make it great.
So a couple of things that you said that I want to tag on. I had a client, it was about 10 years now, who would loved to put a form in front of everything. And in fact, they had a form in front of a 2-minute explainer video about their product. And I was like, you cannot put it there. Like a free trial, a meeting, those things make sense. But people want to watch videos without having to put their information in. So one, I agree with that. But the amount of fight and pushback that we got from the sales team about taking those forms down was like, you would have thought we asked them to chop off a limb in order to remove these forms from the website. So one of the things that you said, though, that I want to key in on is this idea around trying to make it easy for your customers to understand what they are getting. Let them do the research that they want to do before they walk into a sales room. And you talked about the idea of, you know, putting people into a room to figure out how you sell to the end seller. And that same client that I was talking about with the form did one thing that I thought was really interesting, where they designed their entire marketing experience around the influencers, not the decision makers, the people who were kind of doing the research, making the short list, trying to figure out like, okay, is it going to be this company or this company? But they had an ungated PDF or PowerPoint that you could download that was literally titled, "Convince Your Boss to Buy Their Product." And the purpose of this PowerPoint was you could download it and I could take that information and go to my boss and essentially do a presentation on behalf of this brand of why we wanted this. And it was editable so that you could, you know, delete slides, add your own information. But it was the one thing that they kept ungated that I was like, that's probably something I would have gated simply so I could get who's downloading it. But they wanted to make sure that their influencers could go to the room to sell on their behalf, which I thought was really smart.
Yes. And I did something like that. I was just actually laughing with a client because I did something similar almost 15 years ago where I was in marketing for an ERP platform and I did cross-sell upsell. So my focus was to get them to buy these additional products. And I did exactly that. I had a slide. I didn't have as clever of a title, but it was a PowerPoint presentation that used no background, like completely white. It gave them the places to figure out some numbers because, again, tying it back to what is the actual business value. So it had a little guide where you could, you know, it told you, here's what you need to fill in. Here's where you need to insert. And this is the pitch. And in addition to that, we also had PDFs in there based on persona. So it was like a landing page. You could download all the things. It was like, okay, here is what the head of finance needs to understand. Here's what IT needs to understand. Here's what the potential end users need to understand. And so it gave them all of those specifics, and it also gave them talking points of, here's some key things that are going to help you sell this internally. And we actually had someone after they purchased that had told their sales rep that it really elevated their, like, how they were perceived in their organization, in their role. So not only did they buy, but they also felt like we helped them in their career, because they said never before had they really been able to be compelling talking to senior executives, because the influencer was at kind of the manager, individual contributor level. So never had they been able to speak so eloquently, clearly tied to business objectives with senior leaders before. But we handed it all to them and prepared them in a way that they showed up differently and the purchase was easily approved. And this is what it means to really help the buyer. Is not just help the buyer buy, but it is help the buyer achieve what they're trying to achieve in their business. That is what we're here for. And ideally, we make some money doing it. And when you take that perspective, the revenue comes, and it comes in large buckets, because the buyer really feels connected.
What do you think is the biggest blind spot companies have when it comes to their customers or the market in general?
The biggest blind spot is what we've always done. And I really think that people don't invest enough in customer research. And I mean, the old school, get them in a room with people who know how to effectively ask questions and tease out what they're really thinking and feeling. You know, that's expensive to do. So many companies don't do it. We also have a lot of companies that don't even attempt just one-on-one to have conversations with their customers or do win-loss interviews. And these things are really important. Is we can't lean on what we've always known. You know, and especially in leadership, like, I'm in my mid-40s. And when I started in marketing, my first job, I was doing design work for collateral that was being sent via fax machines. And, you know, you think about how much has changed and how many years I operated under a certain mindset, that it is really, really easy to get stuck in, this is what we've always done. This is what has worked. And it's really good, you know, they talk about how your windshield is huge, but the rear view is small. Like, it is important to look in the rear view, because there are definitely lessons we can learn from what we've done. But we also have to look at what's ahead and focus there. And that is the biggest blind spot, is just thinking that things aren't constantly changing. The rate of change has grown exponentially. And so we can't lean on, this is what we've always done.
Thinking of all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet or that you aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we connect with our customers?
I can't say she's necessarily leading the charge, because I don't know that many people know her, but someone that I feel like is at least making the change in the spaces that she influenced is Cindy Knezovich. And I think I pronounced her name right. I've known her long enough now that I've gotten it right. And I've been in multiple conversations with Cindy where, you know, she's got a big personality like me, and she does not at all bite her tongue, which I love. And she has talked so much and so openly in conversations recently about how we, especially on the marketing side, really have to adjust and let go of the forms and, you know, stop tracking clicks and all of the things that are the wave of the future. And so I know her center of influence is small, but she is someone that I have seen repeatedly really like breaking ground and changing minds in marketers around how we have to change. And so that's just my little, you know, love shout out to her, because it is so important that you know, even outside of the big influencers and the people with large followings and stages, there's so much that we can each do as marketers to change the way that our industry works or that our function works. And I really love that she's talking about this and really kind of, you know, instilling in people how much they need to change.
And if someone is really connecting with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
You can definitely find me on LinkedIn. When you search Brandi Starr, you will see my smiling face come up. I am very active there. If you add me, let me know that you saw me on the show. I'm also, if you're in Atlanta, I'm super active in the Atlanta community. And I've got my own podcast, Revenue Rehab. So if you like my two cents, that's a place you can hear more of that now.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was a great conversation.
Thank you for having me. I have enjoyed it.